Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hi again, everybody. Welcome on in. We are with you on this fine Tuesday. Mark Ross from the NFL Network will be with us today. Barry Bloom will be with us today. Barry Bloom, of course, Boomski on baseball. Mark on the draft around the National Football League. So we have a ton to get to. And some of it I think is actually pretty good news. We're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that is with life insurance. If you've not looked into your life insurance while you've been in this period of staying at home, I was talking with some people at Sagicor just the other day on Friday. We were social distancing out in the golf course, and they were saying, you know what, we are seeing a lot of interest, a lot of people that are saying it's time to address things that are going on in their lives. Make sure you do that with your life insurance. That's at Sagicor Now. You get your free quote. Just go online to Sagicor Now. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Good people over there at Sagicor. Eric jumps on in, and I think the story of the day, if you don't say it's the baseball thing, then what do you have? It's not baseball being played in Phoenix.
Well, you and I don't agree on much, but we are going to agree on today's top story. That is easily today's top story. We talked about this a bit yesterday, but now there appears to be more legs. Although I am still skeptical that this is actually going to happen in May, as they are saying, but we shall see. I mean, more people are talking about it. I just wonder, Brad, the one thing that is curious to me is these players are going to go several months without seeing their families. Not
maybe
even a couple weeks. Like
maybe. Because, look, we don't know if this is going to be something that's permanent, right? I'm not seeing where it's, well, they're definitely going to be May, and they're going to play all the way until October. I haven't seen that. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe they've got to lay this schedule out. But correct me if I'm wrong on that. We haven't seen that this would be the whole time. We'll have Barry Bloom on here in a few minutes, too, on the details. Skeptical? Come on. What are you talking about?
May is the target date. They're targeting May. But again, and baseball is unique in the sense that these guys just can't, like, they need a little bit of ramp-up time. That's what spring training is for. You can't just, like, okay, we're starting in 4 days. Get to your teams and go. Like, it doesn't work like that. And the longer that COVID-19 continues to push back and push back and push out and push out on the calendar, I'm skeptical isn't the right word. I'm taking like a wait and see approach.
Don't you think that baseball is sitting there saying, we have lost our foothold in America. We are no longer the sport. Football has sat here this offseason, and to think that they in the NFL offices don't plan things out on a PR basis, what do you know? Every day there's something new that's somehow being released, and it's being released early in the morning. So every day, if it's who's going to be on Hard Knocks or the NFL All-Decade Team or Cliff Kingsbury's available today or we're going to do a blood drive or – and it's great you're doing blood drives. I'm not knocking it. It's just it's very apparent that the NFL has sat there and said, let us seize even more on the rest of sports because we're going to run everybody else into the ground. And – if you're baseball, are they saying, you know what, this is actually a chance for us. Nobody else is going to be able to play games. Nobody else is going to sit there. We can pull this off while building a bubble for basketball. That can't happen in Las Vegas. There's only a couple of arenas, right? So right. I think that for baseball and for Commissioner Manfred and for Tony Clark on the Players Union side, you have to try to figure something out. And we put people on the moon last time I checked. Why can we not figure this out with baseball? And so my point is there's urgency for baseball to do this. There's urgency.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think it's, you know, the NFL draft is always such a big event, but the NFL is really going to capitalize this year because there are no baseball games. Teams are not ramping up for the NBA playoffs. It is going to be the only live, somewhat sporting event that we're going to see, at least for the next month or two. But I agree with you. I mean, baseball, if they can figure out a way to make this work, I don't know how they're going to do it. 32 teams. And I guess they're going to use Chase Field, which they should. And then apparently some other parks might get used besides the spring training venues. I don't know. Like, are they going to go down to your local neighborhood park and try to play Major League Baseball games? Well, I'm not sure what they're talking about. Maybe Phoenix Muni?
You could go to Phoenix Muni. You could go to Grand Canyon University. True. I don't know the dimensions at GCU. You could go to Tucson Electric Park. It is 90 miles, but you could go to TEP. You could go to U of A. And so if you start stacking up the stadiums, and yeah, there's going to be some dimensions that you look at and say, well, that's an easy home run shot. Well, guess what? There are those dimensions in other parks, too, in the major league. So if the wind's blowing out at Wrigley Field, you know, that's just the advantage that they would have to work with. And I think it actually, you know, last week we had Derek Hall on, and he hinted around about some really interesting ideas. And then Scott Boros, the agent, put this out there about a week to 10 days ago, too. And so he didn't put Phoenix. Like, the NBA is looking at Vegas. I get it. They're trying to take care of all the casinos because gambling and all that stuff. Baseball is being smart. Coronavirus is not supposed to live on 105 degree, 110 degree heat, whatever it is. Okay, got that going for us. They play short season A ball. Shoot, Phoenix Rising is playing soccer for 3 hours in the middle of summer and sweating their backsides off. So let's not hear this, well, it's going to be too hot. Maybe you expand the rosters. Maybe it is unfair to throw a starting pitcher out there when it's 115. Well, it is unfair when it's 115 degrees. But maybe if you have a couple of extra arms, if the players union could come to agreement on that. I don't see a downside to this. The hotels would get business.
Exactly.
The hotels would get some check. Right. Fans would not be able to come, but I don't think that's a big deal. I think that's fans at this point just want to see a game. They just want to hear a game. It doesn't matter where it's being played. And to battle the coronavirus, we have it here in Arizona. I have a friend in New York City today I was talking to this morning. And this person is locked in, but they still go down to Central Park and see people not practicing social distance while people in the thousands are dying. And there's nothing, you go at night and sit down and there's just garbage that's on television. People are seeing old games that have already been played. We know who won. The thing in sports, when you already know who won, are you really going to sit there for 3 hours or 2 hours and watch a game again? I can't. Do you? Do you do any of that?
Not recently, but I mean, I have. But I don't make a habit of, you know, watching ESPN Classic every night to relive the glory days of the 80s and 90s. I don't do that. But I don't judge people that do. If that's the way they want to spend their time, that's
yeah.
fun. They have a sports, you know, itch to scratch, and if that's how they go about it, I'm not going to judge them. So.
No, I watched Kobe Bryant for like 10 minutes the other day. It was a Sunday afternoon Celtics-Lakers game. My wife walks in and she says, why are you watching that? I said, because it's Kobe Bryant. Look at him. He's killing everybody. Can I watch a George Gervin game from back in the day against Artis Gilmore? I'm going to go old school here in the ABA. Sure, I could. Watch the Red, White, and Blue basketball and Dr. J. I can't do it every day. Just can't do
it. What I've been doing, Brad, is I've been watching most, if not all, of the 30 for 30s. Because
yeah.
I'm way more drawn to those, even though I've seen them. Usually
yeah.
when you watch those a couple times, it's like a movie. You pick up on something that you missed the first time.
Right.
I prefer to watch those documentaries than watch old games, but whatever.
That's good. All right, Barry Bloom is with us next. Barry Bloom knows all, tells all on the Major League Baseball side in this plan or supposed plan or proposal for Major League Baseball to be played here in Phoenix. That's next, and we'll focus in on the NFL draft. And then Jordan will join us later on our next installment of the class of 2020. Those that had their senior year of high school pulled out from under them, Jordan's got a good one as well. That is later in the show. Thanks for being with us. All right, well, I've heard this story, and this was about a week and a half ago. We had Derek Hall on, and he hinted about some things that may be out there that are really unique when it comes to baseball and get into season play, but he wasn't too specific about it. Scott Boras, the agent, had hinted around about some things. Actually, he was very open a couple of weeks back about the season's got to be played. And then yesterday it comes out that, well, maybe Phoenix is going to be the epicenter of Major League Baseball. And I thought of Barry Bloom. Barry Bloom, senior contributor. You can follow Barry on Twitter at Boomski, Boomski. I've known Barry for 30 plus years, MLB.com, Forbes.com, national reporter, and none better than that Barry to come on this. I hope you're well, first and foremost. How are you handling this whole shutdown of our society?
Well, yeah, thanks for asking, Brad. We're doing very well here. We're in Central Phoenix, and my wife and I have basically been self-isolating since the baseball season and spring training were shut down on March 12th. So we've stayed healthy and, I've been busy writing and, working and getting exercise in, walking around the Biltmore Circle every day. We're blessed to be in a great area with great weather, and the fact that the virus really hasn't, spread to any major degree yet. And hopefully with weather getting warmer, we'll find out whether that's going to stunt the growth of it or not, and whether we'll be able to stay steady or else it will blow up.
You're behind the scenes. I'm sure you'd heard some things about this before it became public yesterday. Maybe you didn't. I guess your reaction when you heard the story of the potential of Phoenix being the epicenter of baseball.
Well, about a couple of weeks ago, when right after the baseball stopped in March and then had to delay again, I wrote a column and I speculated in the column that probably the best way to get this done with the way this disease was going in waves across the country at this point. And I floated the idea of playing spring training parks in Florida and Arizona this year, with the Cactus League being, the self-contained 15 teams here, the Grapefruit League being the 15 teams there, no traveling, never the twain should meet. And now you've had the incidents where the virus is now escalating in Florida, which kind of cuts it out. So I've been talking with people about the possibility of this happening in Arizona for a while. So when it came out yesterday that this was actually under discussion, it didn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote a piece this morning basically saying that, to me, when you look at the data, it's probably the only way that baseball is even going to be played this year, because when you have states in the country like New York, Illinois, Washington, California, where you're at certain levels of the disease and it's not going to abate for a while, these stadiums and baseball in these stadiums are not going to be available. You're not even going to be able to bring 50 players, support staff, some media, broadcast crews. You're not going to be able to bring those together in any of those ballparks in any appreciable period of time. So essentially, if you top out here at the end of April, which is what state health officials are talking about, by the end of June, if you're in a place where there's instant testing of players to make sure nobody's getting sick, and that if you contain the area, it's certainly logistically possible to play the games in Arizona. We have 14 facilities within 90 miles of each other, if you include the two in Tucson and Phoenix, the old Phoenix Stadium where the ASU is now playing, and of course Chase Field. You could wind up playing almost a full schedule and get in 15 games a day. I mean, really, you could play a triple-header at Chase every day. One game in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one at night. And then you could solve, especially if the incidence of the disease is very low here and you have decent testing, you could solve the problem of having fans in the stands by just socially distancing them and selling about half the tickets available in every ballpark and just keep everybody a few seats apart from each other. I mean, there's just, if you think outside of the box, there really is logistical ways of doing this here, and you basically have a made-for-TV product for the rest of the country, and it gives people who are still isolating in parts of the country something to watch on television and a sport. I just think as long as it's healthy and as long as you can gather more than 50 people, the CDC allows that to happen in Arizona, I think you can get this done.
I think you also, Barry, I don't know if you had it in Grand Canyon University's field too, that Andy Stankiewicz has. That's another facility that could be used. The dimensions, I'm not so worried about that. I had some fans that sent me this morning, well, the dimensions aren't all the same. Well, guess what? They're not all the same in Major League Parks either.
Right.
When the wind's blowing out in Chicago, the wind's blowing out in Chicago. In terms of the heat, Phoenix Rising, the soccer team here in town, I've done their games. I've been out there in the middle of July when it's 115 and a monsoon blows through. It happens. There's short season A-ball that takes place here. I believe it's A-ball or rookie ball instructional league here in the middle of summer. So to think that baseball players haven't been a part of this heat, that's something. I think, Barry, the questions I would have for you are, where is Tony Clark and the union come down on a 25-man roster in 110 to 115 degree heat? Would they expand the rosters by a bit? Is that an unknown in your mind?
I think they've already decided on that from in the agreement that they made for this year. They've already decided on expanding to 29 players, whenever this gets going and wherever it gets going. So I think, you know, that's already done. And I think basically, you know, Tony Clark and the players are going to be in the position that, hey, we're going to do whatever we can to get paid. And so that, you know, they're going to have to come to some agreement on, you know, how they parse out the revenue. Although the television contracts, if they do start playing, will all be paid, whether it's at the regional level or the national level. And so that money, that revenue will be coming in. You're not going to be drawing the revenue, obviously, that you usually are used to drawing in some home ballparks, like Dodger Stadium, Yankee Stadium, the high end of the league, San Francisco. That's not going to happen. They're going to have to figure out a way to compensate that and take it off the player's salary, probably. But, you know, as far as playing the season and getting paid, I mean, right now the players are guaranteed through a pool of money to be paid until June 1st. If you don't start playing June 1st, players are going to stop being played. I mean, players are going to stop being paid because there's no revenue coming in. That's opposed to the other sports where, you know, the NBA and NHL, basically, they were almost done with their season. You know, most of their revenue had come in. Most of their salaries had been paid. It was a lot easier for them to pay in-arena personnel, players, whatever, and work out deals than it is for Major League Baseball, which has no revenue come in and no players have been paid through spring training. So I think you're going to have the union working with Major League Baseball to get this done, you know, no matter what has to be done, as long as it's safe and healthy for the players.
A couple other questions, Barry Bloom, will let him go. And that is, do you start the season and say we reevaluate, or this is it, guys, this is going to be where we are for the next 4 to 5 months? You can reduce games rather than the number of games, but you do this on a month, or do you just have to say, nope, the 2020 season is all going to be in Phoenix, regardless of where the virus is, even if it subsides?
Yeah, I think you have to do that. I think once you make the plan to do this and start it, that's where it has to be. I mean, this thing is going to fluctuate, and there's just going to be a lot of areas of the country where it's just not going to be safe to play this year at all. To me, it's like either you do this or you don't have a season. I don't see how you're going to have a season. Yankee Stadium, Citi Field, Dodger Stadium, you know, Oracle Park, they're just not going to take, you know, whatever, Safeco Field, which and they're under a new name now. I think it's T-Mobile. They're just not going to be safe to play anytime in the foreseeable future. So you have to basically say, we're going to do the season here. This is the way we're going to do it. You know, if things clear out by the fall and you have a vaccine, which is basically the only way you're going to just, you know, make everybody safe from this thing, then you could think about neutral site games for some of the playoffs. Maybe the LCS is in the World Series, and you can play them in domes somewhere, but or in good weather places somewhere. But I don't think you can move this out of Arizona once you get it started. Unless, you know, you then get it started and people start getting sick and you have to shut it down again.
Right.
I mean,
there's
all kinds of variables in it.
Okay, last question then, and that is, for the health of baseball, because the NFL just sits there every day and releases stuff every single day. They smell blood in the water because none of these other leagues are playing. Baseball's been down and pushed on in some ways, in a lot of ways, actually. And I want to see the sport regain its foothold. If these two sides cannot figure this out, to me, it is a golden opportunity to get back in a space that they have let slip away. Is that part of the discussion, too? Should that be part of the narrative?
I think the only part of the narrative here is it safe to play? Are you putting health of employees, support staff, players at risk by doing it any way at all? And image-wise, does that conflict with what's going on around the rest of the country to basically say, screw it, we're going to play Major League Baseball no matter what, even while the rest of the country, a lot of people are, you know, three quarters of the country is still isolating. I mean, I think those are the things that you have to look at. I think the economics of the game, the place of the game, all of that, if baseball misses the season and comes back next year healthy, when we get through all this, so certainly I think by next spring, you're going to have a full vaccine. That's your 18-month period that Dr. Fauci keeps talking about, where you can totally test a vaccine and then get mass produced and get it out to the public. And once you do that, like a flu shot, then you'll be able to get back to normal. And then essentially you just have a rebirth of the sport next spring and start all over again without taking any chances this year.
It's good stuff. I appreciate your time. It's good to hear your voice. Glad you're well. Thanks for the time as always, Barry.
You too, Brad. Stay well.
There's Barry Bloom with us. Good to catch up with Barry. Boomski on baseball. Doing this and doing it really well for a long time. It's good to hear his voice and his health. Okay, up next, a new voice to the show, Mark Ross from the NFL Network. Mark has been brought in. He was in the front office of a couple of NFL teams, and with the draft now right around the corner, we're going to go heavy on the draft today with Mark, tomorrow with Ron Wolfley, and on Thursday with Charles Davis. I'm Brad Smith. All right, to do a deeper dive on the Cardinals and number 8, and if they're going to have the tackle there, if Tristan Wirfs will be there or not, and also Arizona State, Brandon Ayuk's meteoric rise, and what about Eno Benjamin? Let's do a deeper dive. A new voice to the show with the NFL Network, been in scouting, been in the NFL front offices. He's won it all. Mark Ross joins us here on Sports 360 AZ. I first hope that you and yours are safe through all this, Mark.
Definitely. Yeah, we're doing well. Just staying inside and staying away from people and hoping this is over soon enough.
Let's look at the Arizona Cardinals with pick number 8. And right now, with the acquisition of DeAndre Hopkins, the direction, is it protecting Kyler Murray up front on the offensive line? Is it defensive line? Is it trading back? A lot of different directions that Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury could go. Your view on the Cardinals coming into this draft?
Yeah, I think they're sitting at a real good position at number 8, where I think there'll be some high quality offensive linemen right there. You know, one of the best offensive line, especially tackle groups that I've seen in a long time, maybe forever, with, you know, the Andrew Thomas and Tristan Beckton's. And so I think there's a lot of options for them at 8 to pick one of those guys who could be immediate starters. But also they need to address the defense, as you know, I think the offense will be definitely fine with DeAndre and Kyler Murray, of course, but, you know, the defense kind of bottom of the league. And although they have some pieces with Chandler Jones and Patrick Peterson, I think just adding more to that group could also be an option there at number 8.
When you look at the tackles, can you splice them apart and say, okay, here's where Thomas excels, here's where Wirfs is, here's where Wills is? Do you have one that you like more than the others on the offensive line, Mark?
Yeah, you know, they're all so different in what they do. You know, Andrew Thomas plays left tackle. Tristan Wirfs at right. Becton's at left. He's long. Even in Isaiah Wilson or Jedrick Willis from Alabama, a lot of people like. So on tape, I thought Andrew Thomas was the best player. He plays left tackle. I mean, he's got those 36-inch arms. He's light on his feet. He redirects really well. So, you know, he was my favorite just on tape. You know, of course, Tristan Wirfs had maybe the best combine workout of any offensive lineman ever, as far as the running and jumping, but also just the movement on the floor. Becton is just such a massive, powerful human being that with a lot of upside, just work on his technique and his finish and his effort. But those guys all have really, really intriguing qualities.
Yeah, you got to plug one into the right side opposite DJ Humphreys, obviously, and that's a big part of it. If they were to go defense, because I think sitting there at eight with the quarterbacks, you know, I know it usually is, there's one team that likes to jump above others or others positioning for quarterbacks this year. I don't know if Herbert's going to be there or not, but maybe at eight the Cardinals could trade back, because there's going to be that quarterback sitting there. Maybe it's getting that defensive tackle a little bit later. Take me through that strategy, potentially, of trading down out of eight.
Yeah, you always talk about trading down, but you have to have a partner to trade down, and it has to be worth what you're trading down for. So it's so easy from the outside to try to maneuver around the draft board, especially on draft day, but you actually have to have a willing partner, and it has to be worth your value. And then you don't want to trade yourself out of a spot where, let's say, you have a group of five players that you really like, but then someone's trying to get you to go back to 20, and then you don't want to miss out on those group of players that you really desire. So it just all depends on how far down the Cardinals have value board, where they feel they can get a quality starter or an impact player. And then if they have that and they can move down some, then you definitely want to make that trade if it's worth your while. But as far as the defensive side of the ball, you know, the Derek Brown from Auburn is there, but there really isn't a lot of high impact defensive players, as opposed to, I think there's more so those offensive type of players, especially with the receiver and the offensive tackle position.
We're talking with Mark Ross with the NFL Network about the draft. Draft's right around the corner. He joins us for a couple of minutes. Look at Arizona State and two players, and what does the tape show you? What do you hear from teams? What do you hear around the league? Let's start with Eno Benjamin, the running back out here.
Yeah, I think Eno is just one of those hard-nosed runners. He's got really good vision, really good run feel. Some guys are just natural at running the football, may not have the burst and explosiveness, top-end speed, but he just has the natural vision and short area. And the balance that I think he'll be a quality running back, more of a number two type rotational back as opposed to that dynamic starter for you.
We always ask the question, and some people really like it. Some people turn their nose up on it. I'll ask you anyways, who does he remind you of?
Well, you know, no one really kind of jumps out at you here right now, but maybe like a Kareem Hunt type of runner. Where, you know, Kareem didn't have those sort of explosive natural qualities, but has that natural run feel, as I talked about, and balance and strength.
Flipping around on to Brandon Ayuk, he has just gotten a lot of buzz here since the combine. We saw him in his one season for Herm Edwards. The wide receiving core is deep. Where does Brandon Ayuk fit in from your view?
Yeah, he's just a really good football player. Some guys just, you just watch him on tape and you just say, man, that guy just is a good player. And they use him in a lot of different ways. You love the versatility. And he's almost this new wave type of receiver where they don't look like that traditional long, lean receiver. He's built more like a running back, and you get the ball in his hands quick. And, you know, he's got excellent run after catch, you know, short area quickness and ability to catch the ball in traffic. So those, you know, use them on end arounds and slip screens and things of that nature, especially in that Kingsbury offense if he happens to go to the Cardinals. But those are the new wave type of receivers who are somewhat running back build and skill set as far as the ball in their hands. And but he's also got deep speed too, you know, and explosiveness down the field. So he's extremely intriguing.
Last question for you, and that is on the Cardinals. What do you make of the Hopkins deal and their offseason?
Well, I've always been talking about the Hopkins deal from really the Houston standpoint, like what are they doing? But from the Cardinals standpoint, I mean, it was, I mean, maybe the most amazing trade in the history of it. I mean, it's unbelievable that when it went down like that, and they gave up DeAndre Hopkins for a second, and they took on David Johnson's contract. I mean, it was just amazing and still kind of bizarre that it went down like that. So, I mean, you have to give credit for I'm sure when they were talking about it, I didn't think they probably even thought that it would get done in the manner that it got done. So I think he's just going to add just instant impact. You know, a guy that's on a trajectory to have a Hall of Fame career, talking about DeAndre, possibly the best receiver in the NFL. And I mean, he's just going to provide instant impact for Kyler Murray and just help his growth so much. Pair him with Larry Fitzgerald, of course. And I think it's going to be very exciting for the Cardinals offense next season.
When you're in a situation like that, Mark, take me over to the front office side, and then I'll cut you loose. And that is, if you were offered something like, hey, DeAndre Hopkins, we have to give them David Johnson, we have to give them cash, do you even go down the hall, or you just say, guys, this is what we're doing?
you're always talking about scenarios, and you always want everybody to be on board with what you're doing. And you always try to see both sides of a trade and make sense of it. But in that respect, I'm sure Steve Keim was like, this can't be real right here. And, and say, well, okay, let's straight up for a second. It makes sense. And then, oh, you want David Johnson too? At that point you want to just get it done. But no, you always want to talk through scenarios with the owner, with the head coach, and with the personnel department, just to make sure everyone's on the right page. But I'm sure that was a pretty easy decision for the Cardinals to make.
Yeah, and the first metric is, oh, by the way, they want to take all the salary.
Yeah.
By the way, amazing, it's not just really. David Johnson and the two. It's his soul. It's his, all of the money's going away.
All the money. Yeah, it's a head scratcher for sure.
Stay well. Appreciate the time. Good to chat with you. Hope to do it again.
Sure. No problem. Anytime.
Thanks very much. There's Mark Ross with us with the NFL Network, one of the new voices on the NFL Network side. Good to catch up with him. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back. Hope your Tuesday is going well. We have decided here as a staff that putting out something around the class of 2020, the high school kids that were they're going through their senior year, and all of a sudden school ended last week. We decided let's do some features on those players. I want to put it on the stream. It's also going to be up on the website. And if you have a senior in high school that had it all in, doesn't matter what sport they played, what time of year it was, and you want them to get a little bit of recognition, just drop us an email. Drop it to Brad at sports360az.com or Eric at sports360az.com or Jordan at sports360az.com or Devin or Sandy with an E at sports360az.com, because everybody's got a story out there of what they accomplished in high school, yet, especially for those spring athletes where it all ended like that. Jordan has a really cool story of one of those people that we want to take the time to honor on the soccer field.
Welcome into 2020 Vision. I'm Jordan Hamm from Sports 360 AZ, and when news came out that high schools in person were not going to be returning, we wanted to talk to some of those seniors that were affected by that decision and the coronavirus, and we're joined by Case Montanil from Brophy College Prep, quite the soccer player, two-time state champion, All-American, and we wanted to get his thoughts on the decision and just what it's been like. And I know that this is probably a more complex question than it usually is, but I'll just start off with just, how are you?
I guess one way to put it is I'm a bit confused with, I guess, how things are going on right now, and just like the scenario and the whole being locked up in your house, quarantine type thing that's going on right now. I mean, missing last few months of school is definitely upsetting, just because of not being able to do things like prom and graduation, I guess, at normal times, or different school trips. It hurts a little bit to not be able to do those and finish out your school like a normal senior, but I mean, I'm kind of just rolling with where life takes me, and figuring out new ways to get things done school-wise, and just, I guess, else.
It's been about a week since that announcement came out that, you know, students wouldn't be returning to campus. Just how has your feelings changed or processed in this past week or so?
Yeah, I'd say I definitely have moved, just kind of get used to the situation. The first couple of days and stuff was difficult trying to comprehend what's going on and trying to figure out new ways of doing school and trying to figure out things. I mean, playing soccer and all that kind of stuff. But I think now I've kind of settled down. I've gotten like a routine down to where I can get everything down in a day, and I guess just repeat that until and hope this ends soon.
What's that routine like?
Yeah, so I have school from 8 to 2:45, or nine to 2:45, and throughout that schedule, it's a bit different because some of my classes are a full 50 minutes of lectures, and the others are here's a bunch of work and you get your work done. And I tend to be a bit of a faster worker, so when the people give me work, it's kind of like, okay, I can bust this out in 30 minutes, no break, and then kind of do whatever I want for another 20 minutes, which I kind of enjoy. It's a good way to do things. I can work at my own pace. After school, most of the time I set up my own training for about an hour and a half to 2 hours of just soccer outside and in my backyard and stuff like that. I have some weights and pull-up bars and stuff like that in my room to where I can, after soccer, I can go from like 5 to 6. And then after 6, it's kind of just like family time and hanging out with my family, which is something that I don't usually get to do because of late soccer practices and homework. So, I mean, it is working out, I guess, in a way that seems better, I guess, than usual for me and something I need. So I think it's an interesting way to go about life. So,
yeah, it's good you can find at least some silver linings in this scenario. What's been the toughest transition?
Definitely school and not being able to see so many people that I would usually be able to see. I mean, it feels very weird not like going throughout your day and just being looking at a computer screen at other people that you would usually be talking with and interacting with. I don't have things like my break and my lunch where I would get to go hang out and talk to other people and kind of interact with them. I don't get to do that as much anymore. It's more just go eat lunch or go get a snack. So that's definitely probably the weirdest for me. And I still do have some, I guess, like I see my friends sometimes, like very close friends. I'll see maybe 2 or 3 of them max on the weekend, just like at different times. It's kind of like, all right, let's just go to someone's house real quick, clean, wash hands every 10 minutes and stuff like that and get to see them. But I don't get to see the people that I would usually go to school with and stuff like that. So it's an interesting change for sure.
Do you think there in some way it's brought some of you and your friends or classmates closer, just trying to be intentional with that time and getting to see them?
Definitely. It brings more like conversation, more deeper conversations out, just kind of people's feelings have come out a lot more, I would say, especially just I think for me, at least, I think I've taken it a little better than some of my classmates have. Like I've seen a lot of my classmates are really upset about it and not being able to graduate and like a normal senior and stuff. So, I mean, I'm just trying to stay positive about the whole situation, and because it is a big deal for most people, I mean, every senior, to be honest. It's a huge deal to be able to graduate with your whole class. So it would be nice to not do that on a webcam, but I mean, there's certain things that you're unable to avoid, and you're going to have to, that's kind of just how, I mean, for how that I've seen it so far, that's kind of how life goes.
I know soccer is a huge part of your life. The fact that you were able to finish out your season and get that state championship as a senior, just what does it mean to you now? Does it mean more now knowing that, you know, some of those usual senior activities aren't available, but you still got to, you know, play out your season?
And we were actually, I was talking about this with a friend probably like 2-3 days ago about how we got so lucky that we were able to finish out our championship and we didn't have to play it 4 months later. And so I don't know, like just being able to finish out the season and do all that was, I'm honestly so grateful for. And to see teams like our baseball team was a springtime like season and a bunch of other teams that are spring. It's just like, I could feel that 100%. Like it's such a devastating feeling to play maybe one game with your team and then lose your entire season to something that is just completely unlucky. So, I mean, teams like that, I mean, if I wasn't able to finish out the season, my last senior year season, I mean, I'd be completely devastated. So it was nice to finish it out and especially finish it out with a state championship.
When you look back at your time at Brophy, where do you think that community helped you grow as a player, grow as a person?
Yeah, I mean, the Brovey community is definitely something special. Going there for the 4 years that I've gone there, it has been an awesome school. I mean, I loved every minute of it. Just everything there, the brothership, as people call it, or the brotherhood, as people call it, and just the connection that you have with basically every other classmate and every other person in your 2020 class is just awesome. Like, people, I mean, I talk to half of them over social media and stuff, and it's so awesome just to be able to have a good relationship with almost every senior in the class and stuff like that. It really is, like, influential in, like, how I decide and take decisions towards things. And I just it helps a lot, especially to have so many people especially during this time. Like, it you see so much more out of people, I guess, like, over social media especially. I mean, I've seen tons of my friends and stuff, and I've been able to talk to so many more people that, I mean, just get a deeper conversation out of people that I usually just wouldn't talk with. So it's the community has definitely been a huge help, and I'm so grateful for being able to go to Brophy and see all these awesome people and awesome community. So
when you think of your, you know, most special or formative memories at Brophy, what jumps out to you first?
Definitely freshman year, a lot of stuff freshman year, just because that was just like the introduction to being brought into something bigger than you. Like, I think for sure, we had a freshman retreat that was like half at Brophy. We slept at Brophy, and then we, with our like senior brothers, and we went to one of our senior brothers' houses and talked for half of it was like religious stuff, and the other half was kind of just us hanging out and having fun. And that experience, just learning from the seniors and learning so much and being taught how, I guess, Brophy, how we're taught to act and how we're supposed to be men for others was a very interesting and awesome experience that I will never forget. I mean, other ones are just with the soccer team, I guess. When we have our retreats down in Manresa, those are definitely like life-changing moments. I mean, getting to get that close with the team and kind of lose, I guess, the stress of everything else, where we don't have our phones, we don't have, I guess, our parents, our normal like houses, it's just us in a house talking. And so I think it's an interesting experience that definitely we'll never forget.
I know you have a lot of exciting things on the horizon for college. Why don't you tell the audience what your college plans are?
So I'm committed to, or we'll be attending University of California, Irvine next year for soccer. And I'm trying to study business information management. I kind of screwed up on my application and said undeclared, so I'm trying to declare that. But that's kind of the plan for college. And I guess see where soccer takes me is the main goal right now. I mean, of course, it's kind of hard being I would say this is like the hard thing about being an athlete, is that once you get to college, you have an unbelievable amount of good players all around you. And so it's like, do you really risk it all? Do you need a backup plan? And so I'm just going to see where soccer takes me. And if it takes me all the way, then I'm all for it. But I'm trying to set up something where I can fall back on and have a successful career if that doesn't work out.
Yeah, plenty of good options for you. Case, we appreciate the time and the insight during a very interesting time in the world, and thanks for giving your perspective.
Yes, thank you.